College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Derek and Zach. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Good morning, everybody.
What's up?
Happy Thursday, day number two of Bills training camp, getting underway at St. John Fisher. It is expected to be a hot one today, so if you are out there, stay cool the best you can. If you're not, well, stay cool the best you can.
Friend of the program, Pat Hammer, WGRZ, sending out the map earlier this morning of like what it's going to feel like today. Near 100 degrees in plenty of places. So
yeah, the sun.
Ice cream is great.
For 5 minutes before it melts in that weather. Before we get fully going today, I do want to remind you that training camp coverage at St. John Fisher University is brought to you by Fiegel Carr & Joyce, your border attorneys. Buy Outlet Liquor when you need to stock up. It's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? By Connors & Ferris, your workers' comp attorney, and driven by your Upstate Honda dealers for great deals on the entire Honda lineup. Visit your Upstate Honda dealer today. We now go to the Western Hotline to get our day started, because live from practice, Sal Capaccio joins the show. Sal, good morning. How are we doing?
Good morning, guys.
Yeah, there we go.
There it is.
Great. I love it. I love it. I had to get it out there and get going here. I had a bit of a challenging morning myself. I had told the story on the radio, but we can all relate to this, right? Which is, I got my coffee in my dorm, I had my nice coffee. I'm like, all right, I'm going to get on the radio. But, you know, I said, oh, I got to get my credentials in my car. So I had to make sure I went to my car, to the parking lot, walk over there, and I put the coffee in the cup on top of the car, on the roof.
You know what I mean? Oh, no.
Yeah. Then when I shut the door, the coffee fell down and went all over the car and a little bit on me. And I'm like, come on, it's going to be that kind of day. But then I thought about it and said, you know, I'm an internally optimistic guy. You guys know that about me. I'm just optimistic and I'm positive. And I said, you know what? The day can only get better from here. So that's the attitude I'm taking as I come out to practice.
There we go.
That is right. That is right. It's so early in the morning. You're like, it actually only can get better.
Yeah, this is a putrid start. We cannot do much worse than this, so we're not going to.
And as I say, the day can only get better. Good news for the Buffalo Bills. Dawson Knox not practicing, but he is out here with the team. We didn't see him at all yesterday. I do see him today walking with the trainers in street clothes. So that's good news for the Buffalo Bills tight end, who's on the non-football injured list with a hamstring injury.
Fantastic. Sal, before we jump into today, we were kind of talking as practice was getting going yesterday. Of course, I think went for like the next hour or so. What were some of your big takeaways from day one? Of course, no pads and kind of more like, you know, it's syllabus week really for the Bills at St. John Fisher.
Well, I think the number one takeaway that when you first got here was what was going to happen with James Cook. And the takeaway is James Cook wants to be here. He wants to be a good teammate. He's not going to let the contract situation distract him. The Bills aren't going to let that happen. And thankfully, it won't happen because James Cook is a part of this team. And it becomes a non-story at this point until it might at some point, you know, during the season when we start talking about this thing. So that was number one. But then you get on the field and you watch the guys play. And I think the biggest storyline, and I wrote about this at WGR550.com, the starting cornerback competition is starting. Like, it's going right now. And you could see that Tre'Davious White, I think I was talking with you guys a little bit, that Tre'Davious was taking some first-team reps, and then they would mix in Max Harrison. But, boy, the rookie looked really good to me, guys. The rookie looked really good. He made a couple really nice plays on the ball, one on Curtis Samuel, actually not on the ball itself, but he made a great job. He did a great job to tackle Samuel and ride him out of bounds before he was able to turn up field, which could have been a touchdown down in the red zone period. That's what they did a lot of was red zone yesterday. And then the play of the day, and the Bills tweeted the highlight of this through their video over at their Buffalo Bills Twitter feed, was a ball that looked like it was going to be an easy catch for KJ Hamler towards the back of the end zone. And here comes Max Harrison out of nowhere. He's not even in your screen. Makes a play to knock it down. That's the kind of athleticism, speed, change of direction that this team is hoping for from the first-round rookie. But look, I mean, he's got to win this job. If he wants to take it, he can take it. He can win it. That doesn't have to be because Tre'Davious White doesn't play well. It just might mean that Max Harrison does so much so well that they say we can't, we got to keep him on the field.
Sal, when it comes to it with Trey White, with Harrison, but also something that you had on the website as well, not necessarily regarding the competition, but Tre'Davious White's infectious personality, once again back at Bills camp after a year away, and we all see the video of Uncle Trey with Deion Dawkins' family and everything like that. It does feel like it's a good feeling at minimum to have Tre'Davious White back in a Bills uniform.
I was talking with Dave Naylor, who covers the team for TSN up in Canada, and he comes down. He's a Bills reporter here, and we were standing on the sidelines watching, and he said, you know, Sal, he said, it doesn't matter what sport, whether it's football, hockey, baseball, basketball. He said, I can't remember and know of any team that so many guys come back after they leave. And I think that's right, right? And Tre'Davious White is kind of the headliner for that this year, which is this is a guy that was gone for 1 year, a couple of stints. He was with, obviously, the Rams and the Ravens. And then, bam, you know, he shows up here and he comes back. He re-signs as an unrestricted free agent. And his personality is infectious. His persona around the team, that he is so beloved and so loved by his teammates, by his coaches, the people who have been here, by the fan base. And I think that really came out yesterday. You saw that video you were just talking about with him and obviously Deion Dawkins. So, yeah, I just love to see that. And I'll tell you from our standpoint, from a media standpoint, Trey, it was tough when he was hurt. We really didn't hear from him. And obviously he was going through a lot. You know, mentally it was very tough on him. When Tre'Davious White is feeling good about himself and he's out here playing football, he's a super awesome guy to talk to and have fun with from a media standpoint as well.
Yeah, I think most of us have heard that about Trey. It's just he is like that guy that you kind of want to be around. And I would imagine for a certain age group of Bills fans, Trey White might be one of your favorite Bills of all time. Of course, we all kind of remember the play where he picks up the play sheet and is looking at it because of the wind. And like, you kind of become famous. For me, Sal, too, I always get a little nervous sometimes when the players do come back because you're oftentimes not getting the guy that first showed up here. But it was really encouraging yesterday to hear that Trey White, at least from reports I was seeing yesterday, looked really good. And then you're also seeing Harrison make the play of the day. And you know, looking to last year with Rasul Douglas and eventually Kyer Elam, they had a real weakness at CB2. They could have a really good problem here if, while yes, they have the number one, you know, or the first round pick in Harrison with the crazy trait that he has with his speed. Be awesome, though, if Trey White goes back to somewhat of what he used to be in Buffalo.
No doubt about it. I mean, I don't know. I don't think anybody's expecting Trey White to be all-pro Trey from a few years ago. But, boy, I think, and the Bills have indicated this, that they really liked his progression when he went from the Rams to the Ravens and where he was by the end of the year. Was he a lockdown corner? No. But, he was getting significant time. Remember, he had a penalty against the Bills in the playoff game against the Ravens. He was covering Keon Coleman. He was on the field, though, guys. He was playing for a team and playing significant snaps for a team that was one of the top teams in the AFC and has Super Bowl aspirations. I think that says a lot about where Tre'Davious White still is in his career.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking to today, though, we did hear from Bills offensive coordinator Joe Brady, and at least from what I heard, one of the main characters of that was Keon Coleman, and he is absolutely somebody. I know me and Derek read some tweets yesterday from some listeners as well that's one of the storylines a lot of fans are keeping on. It is really just Keon Coleman as a whole, what kind of step forward he takes in year two.
Yeah, for sure. Keon Coleman is a really important player for the Buffalo Bills this year. We know that. Going into his second year, they expect that jump. But they also know that, you know, last year, because he didn't come back from that injury the way that everybody expected him to, hoped him to, and wanted him to, we know that from the way that Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean both spoke about Keon, which is, you know, he needed to kind of be better coming back from that. But that happens with young players. They don't know how to deal with injuries early on in their career. He's never had a significant injury like that. And, you know, he showed up, I would say, bigger and stronger in OTAs and minicamp. He stayed around in Buffalo. Same thing with Dalton Kincaid. They're both in the same boat in this regard for a couple of different reasons, but kind of in the same boat. So, yeah, he has an opportunity here in Buffalo to be a very, very key member and key piece to what they do at wide receiver. I really like what Joe Brady said about Keon Coleman. If you're coming out here and you're watching him, he said, really, when the pads come on is when you get the separation for wide receivers because of the physicality. Out here, guys, in shorts and t-shirts, that's not Keon Coleman's game, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah.
His game is going to be when it's more physical, and you know, guys try to put hands on him, and they can't do that. And I would caution anybody coming out to training camp, don't judge anything about Keon Coleman the first few days. Let's wait till the pads come on, and he can get a little bit more physical, and guys start to get physical with him, and that's how you're going to see Keon Coleman in his truest form.
Sal Capaccio joining us here on the Wester Hotline from training camp. After day one, Sal, we had a couple of injuries. Laviska Shenault being put on the non-football injury list, for example, though, it does look like the Bills might be trotting out a cavalcade of players to try to see who might fit with kick and punt returns, including what looked like visuals from earlier this morning right now, Keon Coleman and Khalil Shakir fielding punts.
Yeah, well, that's something they're going to do a lot of, and they did last year. If you remember last year in the playoffs, remember Khalil Shakir did return the punts in the games. Keon Coleman took reps. He did it in college a little bit. He took reps in those spots. So, yeah, that's something you're going to see some of. Guys rotating in and out, like you just said. Keon Coleman, Khalil Shakir, whoever it is, getting opportunities to punt a little bit. Sorry as I walk, guys, a little bit windy. If you pick that up, my apologies. I'm trying to walk from one field to the other to watch what's going on. I'm watching. Keon Coleman actually just caught a pass right here, a little slant pattern. They're doing a little bit of just quarterback throwing to wide receivers. But you're right, Laviska Shenault on the injured list now and with a lower leg injury. And then Dawson Knox is out here working with trainers. That's a good sign. Cedric Van Perren Granger, I haven't seen Cedric Van Perren Granger. He's also a guy that's obviously out right now. He's on the PUP list along with Spencer Brown. And the Bills didn't seem too overly concerned about, you know, Spencer Brown or Dawson Knox and their injuries.
Sal, last thing for me, and speaking on injuries, right before we came on, there was some breaking news out of Jets camp. Quarterback Justin Fields, I'm going to put quotations around carded. That does not mean the same thing as it has in years past. That has now just become, it's the easier way to get a guy to the locker room, to the medical staff, so to check on him. But he did get carted off the field with an apparent lower leg injury. For a team that, you know, is not getting a lot of headlines, I mean, Aaron Glenn goes in there. I think he's really trying to fix the culture there. Fields, though, had a little bit of juice to him in terms of how exciting he could be. It just feels like another hit for Jets fans where it's just like, when is this going to end? I mean, as a Bills fan, I kind of don't want it to, but I do love Fields.
I thought the same thing when I heard it from Joe this morning. I didn't know. He told me, and I thought the same thing, which is, boy, I mean, if you're a Jets fan, you're like, are you kidding me? Like, what's going on here? So you hope that Justin Fields is okay, seriously. Like, you just never want to see that with anybody, especially a young quarterback who did a nice job to kind of resurrect his career a little bit last year. The Jets are an interesting team. I don't think they have enough to compete with the Bills in the AFC East, but they have some talent. We know Sauce Gardner and Garrett Wilson, you know, signed those extensions in the offseason. They're starting to pay their guys, their young guys. They want to keep them around. They just need that quarterback piece to hit, and it would be really, really shame if something were to happen to Justin Fields.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Sal, we'll let you go. Go watch practice. If anything crazy happens, you do know where to find us.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
That was Sal Capaccio there on the West Her Hotline. The Keon Coleman thing that Sal brought up there is really, it's something to chew on a little bit, because that's right. I mean, that's not his game. We say it all the time with the offensive line and the defensive line. Like, you kind of can't judge them outside of, like, maybe how quick they are until pads go on. And Keon Coleman not being really the smaller, you know, faster kind of receiver, his 6'4", 220 frame kind of needs to wait for pads to go on before he can really show out.
And we'd mentioned it, like, hand fighting is one of the few things that you can actually work on in camp without pads. But even then, it's not as physical either.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to make sure you're, like, owning the space, that is something that pads aren't going to allow for as comfortably. Or no pads, I should say, as comfortably. I'm here for, let's get to the pop, let's get to the thuds. Because then you get to see even more from certain players, and including the defensive line.
Yeah, that's a group that I
can't
so
evaluate
how they look.
Anything about them without pads on.
It really is like, do they look quick and are they like slim or bigger? Like
that's
all you've got.
But that's an appetizer. That's just a small taste of their power. No, and I need to see them in those one-on-ones with the drills, with those pads on. Come on.
It's even
or even the team blocking schemes.
Well, team blocking schemes, but that's the thing. Like, Spencer Brown is down right now, so they're rotating offensive linemen at right tackle. Right now, it appears to be Ryan Vandermark. Yesterday, it was Tylan Grable. You can't really get a good gauge on either of them with Brown out. So, they're picking up reps, and that absolutely is true, and they are quality, but there's a ceiling there for them until pads go on. And really, the hope is that Brown's back by the end of the week, right? Because no one sounded that concerned
exactly
to anybody's injuries. So the hope is he's back even before pads come on. But then, like, you look at some of the other guys that maybe were getting quality reps, there was a ceiling there. There was a limit to, like, how quality they could really be to actually see how much growth there is. But, I mean, kind of, you know, picking fights sort of with nothing. Like, I like this group. I'm excited to see what they look like, but I'm not overly, I'm not losing my patience yet in terms of like the pads not being on. That'll come quickly, but it's not, day two is not fast enough.
Yeah, day two is not fast enough for it. We need to see a little bit of that live action, a little bit of that thud, a little bit of that pop. That's all I want. Mm-hmm. You know, like that allows it to be this feel that football has more of a genuine feel to it.
803-0550, the number to call if you want to jump on the show, give your thoughts on the start of training camp. Cornerback two might be maybe the most fun battle, though. And at least if it signs early, day one, it genuinely could be fun. It may not be one of those camp battles where the winner wins out, but we're not sitting here kind of cheering. It's just more like, okay, that's who they're going to go with. I mean, if you're getting quality time from both Trey White and Max Harrison, and then you add on the experience from Trey White, the fact that he's not going to be asked to be CB1, that is going to be Christian Benford, or Max Harrison, okay, your first-round pick, you're kind of hoping he hits to maybe make a perfect duo with Benford, and then you add in his elite trait that we saw yesterday. Sal brought it up, that play that kind of the Bills threw out there and sort of was the play of the day. Sal portrayed it perfectly. He's not in the frame, and then he is. And that's the closing speed. That's what he offers. It'll allow him to make maybe more mistakes in his rookie year, take more chances, because he has that catch-up speed. He can make up for some mistakes, some risks that he took. And that could
closing
be,
speed
yeah,
is
that
important.
Can be an exciting aspect of the Bills' defense, because I do think, to a certain extent, the Bills have been missing that pop in a lot of areas where Harrison could really add something there.
You know something from camp that always gets me giddy? Like you said yesterday, and I love it, that you're going to be irresponsible with any Elijah Moore videos.
Full blown, baby. It's all right.
I get giddy about players staying after practice to work on more stuff. When you see this player's out on the field, Josh Palmer with Josh Allen.
Yeah, they stayed after yesterday.
He stayed after to work with Allen a little bit more. And then I see Dorian Strong working with Christian Benford.
That's very much your guy.
That's my guy.
That has become your guy.
That's become my guy. And he's going to need, like, players like that are going to need extra attention so that they can, you know, stand out. Find your way to stand out in training camp. Find your way to steal snaps. Find your way to get a game day jersey.
Yeah.
Obviously, Palmer is a different class in this because it's about what is his fit on this team and how extensive are they using him. They have plans for this guy. Strong, with this cornerback room, do something to stand out. You have to. For Hancock, it's, hey, you're taking second-team reps at nickel.
Yeah, your versatility is going to be
your
biggest asset.
Your versatility is your biggest asset. For Strong, it is he's working at gunner, and he is taking time after practice to work with Benford. You need to do something with this cornerback room because of how deep it is. Everyone just conveniently forgets Dane Jackson's here too.
Yeah.
Jamarcus Ingram, Cam Lewis, these are guys that have been on this roster for years now. They will need to fight. There's going to be a lot of tough decisions made in the secondary. While it has the biggest amount of questions, it does seem to have the most amount of players that can vie for playing time. So yeah. Videos is one thing. You know, seeing the nice little plays, the Harrison breakup was a really nice one. For me, it's always going to be about what are players going to do to stand out? What are players trying to do to find their way? What are players trying to do to expand on their role? Staying after practice, working with special teams. Coleman fielding punts to begin practice here today is very interesting to me.
And I like Sal that he brought that up too, that Coleman had done that in college.
Exactly.
For I think a lot of fans, you'll hear kickoff returners and punt returners, what's their 40 time? Like that, like who has the pop speed? Coleman is not that guy, but he has like the long stride speed. I mean, we all know like he got at the combine, the miles per hour. He was one of the top guys. Coleman did that at Florida State. I mean, he's an all-around athlete.
We all saw it with him a couple times last year. The play that gets him back in the Houston game is a yards after catch play where Coleman just storms his way down the field for a touchdown.
Yeah.
That's the kind of player that you'd have fielding punts? Okay.
Right. That'll work.
That'll work for me. That works for me. And it makes sense. Florida State used him in that way. Shakir, what more do we need to say about a slippery pinball than Khalil Shakir? Other than maybe not give him a couple extra opportunities to seek out contact.
When they initially drafted him, man, out of Boise State, I thought he was like a diet Deebo Samuel. Boise State was having him take handoffs out of the backfield. Like, he was doing everything for them. Yeah. I mean, the Bills, I think, have found the right way to use him, which is just as a traditional slot receiver with more yak ability. But when he was initially drafted, I was like, guys, he's a gadget player. He's going to do everything for you.
It seems like Khalil Shakir, though, also is a player that has not met contact that he doesn't like.
100%.
So if I've got that man bouncing off of a punt team, I'd get a little nervous eventually.
I mean, yeah, eventually. It's one of those things, though. Like, I've gotten there, and part of it, I think, is actually due to Josh Allen. I've stopped kind of worrying about it. Like, I just want your best ability. Like, whatever it is, I want your best plays. I don't want a guy who's going to be here maybe 5 extra years, but the 5 years just simply aren't the same.
Right.
Like, it's where I've gotten, obviously, with Allen of, like, I don't really want his rushing ability gone. Give me the 10 to 12 years of truly elite play rather than the 15 to 17 of, well, the last 5 years weren't great. But, you know, he was still here and he was still okay. Give me what they have now, and we'll worry about all that stuff later. GMs are already drafting 2, 3, 4 years in advance, so I'm okay with that. By the way, talking about a guy standing out, and we already mentioned his name, Palmer yesterday obviously stayed after with Allen. Today, Matt Bovee tweeted about 20 minutes ago that Palmer was hanging out with McDermott.
Yep.
Talking it up, chatting it up. So that is definitely going on. Palmer, he's a guy – If you listen to Bean really talk at all this offseason anywhere, you kind of knew they had big plans for him. I'm just so curious to what those plans actually could materialize into. Like, what could he actually be? Is he a guy that has like a John Brown type season back from 2019 where just, hey, he was good, not great, gets though into the right system, gets into a right role with the right team, and all of a sudden, boom, he's a 1,000-yard guy, 85-catch guy, 6, 7 touchdowns, and you're like, he's not the best, but you can certainly win a Super Bowl with him. I think maybe the Bills might have that idea for him. Because a lot of this group is the same of, hey, we really like John Brown. Really think this Josh Palmer guy can come in and kind of do something similar. Not the same guy, but something similar of like he can really break out here. And the problem with Brown was he just got old fast.
Yes.
I mean, he had about 2 really good years with the Bills, and just, you know, his elite trait was how fast he was, and he got old fast. Palmer comes in at 25, 26 years old.
Right.
And they signed him to a 3-year deal. There's a feeling there of, if this works, we could have him for his prime.
We can have him here for at least a couple of years and get really good value out of it. And if that's the case, well, then down the road, we kick the can, see what we have to do after the 3-year contract. But if they have big plans for him and he's able to live up to what they suspect, the offense could have an extra wrinkle of nasty to it.
Yep.
I do think that chemistry between Allen and Palmer will be important. And the fact that he is working extra time after practice tells me he knows what his role is going to have to be, how important it is, and what he can do to keep up with it is just as important.
Yep. 803-0550, the number to call. You are, of course, listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you will find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer here with you on a beautiful but hot Thursday morning. This is WGR.
As a receiver, I mean, separation that he can create with his feet. I think that off the line, just the way that he's really taken ownership of it, and he cares about his craft. He's just an easy guy to throw to, body language, eyes, and I feel like his catch radius is some of the best I've been around.
Buffalo Bills quarterback Josh Allen talking about a fellow Josh, Joshua Palmer. We didn't talk about him a lot, and I think partially it was because they didn't really do much in the draft. They gave this guy some pretty good money for some less than ideal stats. But, Derek, you bring it up. He was in a Greg Roman offense last year.
Correct.
And 2 years prior, he was garnering a lot of targets. He seemingly was really building with Herbert. Picks up a bit of an injury in his third year, if I remember correctly. And then last year, it's Roman. And kind of at that point, they're moving on. It's a new coaching staff. They have a very different identity with Harbaugh and with Roman. And here we are.
if he has those abilities, I think that is exactly the receiver that Allen loves to throw the ball to. That is exactly who Allen loves to throw the ball to. Get open, get to a spot quickly, boom.
Yes, and furthermore into that is the fact that I don't know what, how much usage, because like the Brady hat, everybody eats. Like, how much is it going to be? Like, what's the statistical output that we're looking at here for Palmer?
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't know, and I'm not necessarily worried about it. Because the Bills do have a bevy of options. Moore is going to take targets. He's too good not to.
Agreed.
If Kincaid and Allen figure out the chemistry that is wonky between the two of them,
mm-hmm.
he should take some attention. James Cook will take some of these plays. Khalil Shakir is already established.
Yeah, 100 targets last year, yep.
Keon Coleman should have himself a better year. I do believe that. So what does it actually look like numbers-wise? And the answer to that is I have no idea. And that's not a bad thing.
No, because I mean, it goes to what Brady was saying this morning when he spoke to me, Bills offensive coordinator Joe Brady. You know, you want to change things up. You don't want to stay stagnant because you want to stay at a high level. You know, the Bills don't even throw 500 passes last year. At least Josh Allen does not. But do all of a sudden, you know, the better personnel lead them to go, yeah, we'll throw the ball 540 times in a season. Then all of a sudden, yeah, the targets change drastically with who gets what and who leads the team in targets, the whole thing. I absolutely believe that was part of the issue last year. I mean, for two games, they kind of couldn't throw the ball.
If you get Palmer's career best numbers here, 72 catches, 769 yards, 3 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
Who's complaining? Consider last year, that would very cleanly be second on the team. By a lot.
And it would lead the team in targets.
That leads the team in catches.
Yep.
Nope.
Only targets.
4 off. Shakir had 76.
Mm-hmm.
But it did come, for example, on 107 targets. So that would have led the team in targets.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very easily second on the team in receiving yards.
Yeah.
And I would expect that Coleman's touchdowns get the bump. You know, red zone type player, a little tougher to play against. Doesn't matter if he's covered. Try to attack the ball with your hands. Secure it. But it could very well also be Palmer.
Absolutely. 803-0550, the number to call. Let's go to the phones. Steve is up first this morning. Steve, good morning. How are we doing today?
Hey, doing pretty good. This question is kind of coming off of what we were talking about with Trey White before, and you know that some of these guys that you know we've had around for a while, you know, are going to end up on the cutting room floor when we do that final 53-man roster. And I wasn't sure if this is the year that they kind of move away from that fullback position with Reggie Gilliam to kind of give one of these younger guys a chance to make it on special teams. And I would say also even at that fullback position, you know, I don't think there's any pop from Reggie Gilliam at that spot. When I think of a fullback, I think of more of like Ricard for Baltimore. You know, especially in our run game, I think we can do better at that spot too if we're looking to have someone specific to that spot.
Yeah, Steve, thanks for the call. You know who might actually take the Reggie Gilliam role if they really wanted to use a traditional fullback? And Gilliam is kind of more of like a third string tight end also for them. Like he kind of does a lot. It's actually, I think, Jackson Hawes.
Yeah.
Because they're going to want that big bruiser blocker kind of type. I think that's maybe who they go to. I agree, though. Like Gilliam's been on the roster for a while, and you do kind of sit there often. Like, what do you do?
But also,
he kind of does a lot of the dirty work for him.
Yeah, that's the thing about fullbacks. We don't talk about them if they're not being noticed. And when are you being noticed as a fullback? The same way you'd be noticed as an offensive lineman. You're missing a block.
Yeah, you did something poor.
And you don't hear much of anything from Reggie Gilliam. He is the quiet workhorse that throws his body in the way to help get you some extra yards. If you want to look at trying to create roster space, I don't know if fullback right now is the way you do it. Not with Brady's mm-hmm. propensity to want to run the football more and create more balance. I would go ahead and listen, though, to you get one of these reliable roster players to being your kick or punt returner,
mm-hmm.
and can Codrington do something as a corner to preserve his spot? on this team. And considering the size of the room and everything with the talent around it, I don't know. Codrington, as a returner, has to be the best return man because that's the only way that he will really retain his spot. But the Bills are rotating in a lot of players right now. If one of those guys that is a roster fixture stands out, then you might be looking at, hey, we might be able to secure an extra roster spot somewhere because we have our return guys and they're like Shakir and if Curtis Samuel gets into the rotation, for example,
right.
or Ray Davis mm-hmm. is a primary return man
or,
now.
Coleman.
Or Coleman. If one of those guys can stand out returning the football, you look at that's how you can create roster space. I don't know about fullback right now. I don't know about Gilliam.
I think especially, too, because Gilliam's the only one. I mean, he's the only guy they have listed at fullback.
And also, if Gilliam has clearly lost a step, that's when you have that conversation.
Right.
And that's something that the Bills will know before a lot of people will.
Oh, absolutely. It is funny. He has been on the roster for a while, since 2020. Undrafted, picked up Bryan, and he's been here since. He... weirdly, is a guy that we all know and probably shouldn't. It's not like he's made like these huge pop
plays. Feels
like
he's been here forever, but he's only 27.
Yeah, he's only 27. I mean, like, he was an undrafted free agent out of 2020. It's not that long ago, but it's 5 years. But he kind of just – he does the dirty work well. I do wonder what their plans are with Hawes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's a guy that – look, he was a late-round pick for a reason, but – the thing he does really well is block and hit people. And knowing how Brady likes to run the ball and they want to bring in that sixth offensive lineman, that extra blocker. I mean, that's where Alec Anderson obviously is coming, right? You do wonder if Hawes, you know, I look at it too, Derek. Dawson Knox, we're kind of getting to the end of that as well with Knox.
Correct. You know, there's a contract there that mm-hmm. is going to slowly become more and more of a problem.
Yep. And Kincaid is not the hands in the dirt, I'm going to hit you tight end. He's obviously a receiver. Like, that's mm-hmm. that's what he was drafted for. That's how he's been pitched since being here. I wonder if the Bills, again, we've talked about it, like GM's draft 3-4 years down the line. I wonder if their plan with Hawes is not necessarily to fill like even a Reggie Gilliam role, but literally just to be that second part of a tight end. And just, dude, you're here entirely just to hit people. And you're here to block while Kincaid gets open. And that's how it's going to be. And if you show any semblance of picking up that receiver aspect, then, and I wonder, they're thinking, great, maybe if Kincaid doesn't take that next step, we have our tight end of the future. If he ever develops that versatility that you kind of need at the tight end position, but he is much more of a wait and see kind of guy.
Yeah, and the other thing about this, though, is that Knox is still capable, but... here's the other part about that with Hawes. Knox being out,
mm-hmm.
Hawes is rotating in with the first teamers already. Mostly because there's no choice.
Mm-hmm.
They're not playing him any fullback snaps. So, appreciate the call. I don't know if Gilliam is something to question.
Yeah, I don't know if it's Gilliam. 803-0550, though, if you want to join the conversation. A quick update from practice. It's coming from Alex Brasky. Dorian Williams sustained an apparent injury early during team drills, has not returned after exiting with a trainer. Something to monitor regarding the Bills linebacker and leading tackler from a season ago. Derek, I know Dorian Williams is absolutely one of those guys for you that you have looked to as sort of this, you know, potential Matt Milano replacement even as early as this year because, yeah, he led the Bills in tackles. He was very good for them in replacing Milano, and we are kind of getting there, like I said with Knox, with Milano of, okay, do you have to start talking about the future? That's kind of when they picked Dorian Williams as well, was that eventual replacement of both Tremaine Edmonds and Matt Milano. That's kind of how it felt with both TB and then into Dorian Williams the very next draft out of Tulane. That's how it's felt. But if he, you know, potentially picked up an apparent injury here, he would be a bit of a miss. But they do have a good linebacking room.
It's that they have some depth now. It is because of what Williams was able to do last year, jumping year one to year two. And effectively, he was forced into a starting role last year, but he did not look overwhelmed. And a lot of it was can you read and recognize better? Because he has the athletic ability to go sideline to sideline. He's a fast-moving linebacker. He's a rangy player. Can you recognize and take the proper angles? That was the problem in the KC game.
Mm-hmm.
He and A.J. Klein struggled in that game.
Mightily.
I do suspect that if healthy, Dorian Williams will offer a solid piece of depth in case Matt Milano is a little bit on a snap count, or they do need to spell him every now and then just to preserve his health. Williams is up to the task. And if that's the case, well, linebacker suddenly becomes something you can breathe easy about compared to last year.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to a couple of years ago.
Now, I will say, though, talking with Sal yesterday, and I mean, there was excitement in his voice, too, talking about Matt Milano. And that's a player, the last few years, the Bills have almost had to learn to live without. You know, we got there with Trey White as well.
Right.
Just picking up injury after injury kind of in successive years, it led the Bills to, like, okay, we've got to figure out how to be without you. And eventually led to the release of Trey White. And, you know, eventually
the trade for Rasul Douglas.
Yep. You know, they had to learn how to live without him, and it has worked. And now he's back. But Matt Milano, it's sort of the same thing. He is a player to that certain extent because they have learned to live without him. Their leading tackler was his backup. It has led me to kind of forget a little bit about him. But if they get even close to the All-Pro Matt Milano from 22, plus the ascension of Terrell Bernard, that is such a strength for this team. That is such a strength of where they can go forward, especially if the D-line maybe takes a little bit of time to really get going, or just the depth is tested with Hoyt and Ogunjobi out for 6 games, or the cornerbacks and the young safety room takes a little bit of time to gel. That could be really, really huge for the Bills going forward, is having that talented linebacking room. And at this point now, Milano really kind of – the injuries are behind him, hopefully.
With practice going on, by the way, right now, and we see people – you know, reporting everything. I'm seeing a lot of Jackson Hawes in here, but not for the reasons that you'd want to suspect.
No.
Williams was covering Hawes on the play that he pulled up.
Mm-hmm.
And then A.J. Epinesa bonked Hawes after a play.
Oh, you guys can't do that. The pads aren't on yet. We can't be doing that. We cannot be doing that.
There was no scrum after it, though. Like, both players just walked away. And I'm going to guess that, like, Epinesa realized there was a mistake in his target, and they're just like, all right.
Tough. 803-0550, the number to call. We do also have an injury update from Jets camp.
Yes, we do, about Justin Fields.
This is from Kimberly Martin of ESPN. This is her tweet. Huge sigh of relief. Player stepped on Fields' toe. The Jets quarterback should be fine. We've all stubbed our toe. We know exactly how the feeling is. But that's why I said it with Sal, though. I know Jeremy said it too. It's cart season. It does not mean the same thing as it has years ago.
If you're dealing with a foot injury,
imagine a lineman stepping on your foot in cleats.
Yeah, it's gonna hurt.
That would hurt a lot.
And to be fair, you pull up anything, like if you're like, "Yeah, my toe hurts," correctly, trainer's gonna be like, "Let's go check it out." But get off the field. Come on, we're gonna go check it out.
No, why would we have you walk on it?
We're not Jacksonville. We're not animals.
Oh, your hand hurts? Yeah, do a handstand real quick.
Do you guys remember that, though? Like the Jacksonville Jaguars, was, I think, a primetime game.
Yep.
Trevor Lawrence hurts himself, and he has to walk to the locker room with trainers next to him. It is the most grueling thing I've ever seen.
And, yeah.
Like, it's why? Like,
hey, your shoulder hurts? Here, carry this thing real quick.
We gotta test it. We gotta make sure.
We have to test it on our way to the trainer room. No, of course you're not going to walk on it. Like, it's good, though, that it's like that. But tell me, anyone that's played the game, from Little League to the highest level that you ever could have, somebody steps on your foot with a cleat, doesn't feel good.
Yep.
Not a good time. Everybody hates it.
803-0550, the number to call. CJ, we'll get to you first after this quick timeout. If you hang on, you're listening to Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR. Wrapping up hour number one here of the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Let's get connected to our fans. Brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. CJ on the line next. CJ, good morning. How we doing?
Good. Good morning, gentlemen. Hey, I had a quick question, but
sure.
It's not a simple question. So we had questions in regards to how, you know, not having any speed on the back end for the defense last year.
And that's what's great about our draft pick, our first-round pick, Maxwell Harrison. Mm-hmm. He has speed. That's phenomenal. What frightens me is the back end, our safeties. They're not fast to me. And maybe that's just me, but we play teams with, like, we play the Bengals this year. They have some speed on the outside, especially with Chase after the catch. We got the Dolphins in our division. There's teams that we play, even in the regular season game against the Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes missed on a few bombs to him, but he was open. And that's more or less a zone coverage thing. If the wide receiver is passed off to the safeties, I don't think they can keep up. If you have somebody with a strong arm, they can throw it over the head and say, mm-hmm. Hey, I want you to run and go get it. That frightens me. I believe our up front, that helps us a lot. And I don't think they'll have too many deep shots, but from the history of us having Poyer and Hyde, we're used to the Bills not giving up so many deep balls. Last year, we saw a lot of it for the most part, more than what we've seen.
Yeah. More than we're used to. Yeah, that's right.
Right. And that's the only thing that concerns me about this team. If we're playing man, I think we can keep up with Harris Maxwell chasing somebody. But if he has to pass it off to the safeties, I don't think anybody's fast enough to really keep the lid on the defense, honestly. I think that's our weak spot on defense.
CJ, thanks for the call. I agree. I think it's the weak spot on the defense, mainly because it's a lot of unknowns. I don't know necessarily if I would agree with the speed aspect, because I don't really know if I would say Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer were particularly fast athletes. They just were in the right spots at the right time.
They were very regularly heavy, very cerebral type mm-hmm. players, the both of them. They did have, obviously, the requisite athleticism to be starting safeties in mm-hmm. the NFL. It's not the unknown, Zach, that I think is the worry here. It is that there is more known. That is, of the three safeties that you expect to rotate in with this secondary, mm-hmm. you know what two of them are. They're box safeties.
Yeah.
Okay. I do think that Taylor Rapp is best suited as the box safety, the one playing in closer to the line of scrimmage. It's that one piece of unknown that you are right about, though.
Yeah.
Cole Bishop. A healthy Cole Bishop showing to be rangy will be a big boon if he's able to do it. If he's healthy, if he's showing his athleticism and his range, I have no problem with dealing with that and coming in here with year two as what I was suspecting from the beginning, which is Cole Bishop to play the high, and then you can have Rapp in there comfortably. Mm-hmm. And if Rapp, in his aggression, he gets himself into a lot of hits that even hurts himself.
Yeah.
But I'm comfortable with a couple games of DeMar Hamlin playing the box if necessary.
Well, that's where I think most Bills fans would agree Hamlin is best suited, not just as a box safety, but also as just I can come in for a few games. Like the traditional backup of, okay, I don't want you starting every game, 4 or 5 though, to get through it. Fine.
If Rapp's out for a couple weeks, for example, I'm cool with it. I'm absolutely good. It's what has to happen.
I also will say with Bishop too, if you are worried genuinely about speed, he did run a 4.45 at the combine. Like, he's not slow by any means, but he is also a bigger person, 6'2", 200 pounds, runs the 4.45. Like, he is an athlete. Full stop. He is an athlete at the safety position. It's a lot of the same with Coleman too, with his injury in the middle of the year. But at this time last year, Bishop wasn't practicing, and that basically ruined his rookie year because he could not catch up. What is Cole Bishop if he doesn't get hurt? The Bills expect a lot from their safeties. I'm not saying they don't, but are we coming into this season way more comfortable at the safety position if Bishop doesn't get hurt and is able to play a little bit in the year? Because to be perfectly honest, Derek, you know, CJ brought up too, it's not that it was a lot of deep shots. It was just way more than we were used to. And one of them was against Cole Bishop, specifically the Houston game.
And it's the first time they'd given up a deep mm-hmm. touchdown in legitimately years.
Yeah.
So something genuinely over the top. That's the first time that's happened in a long time with this defense. And I think that has to do with that is his first time getting up to that type of game speed.
Mm-hmm.
He did not get training camp. He did not have a chance to start. And the first time that he's thrown into starting action in any circumstance, it's against Houston.
Yep. And Sal Capaccio tweeting here just about a minute ago, on the cornerback two battle, very often when Trey White subs out, Max Harrison comes in, I see the two make sure they find each other and give a low five or an exchange of words as the two pass by. Unsurprising.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours.
Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I think for Bills fans of Trey White, I feel like he's a guy that doesn't have to be told to be a mentor. He's just going to be. That's just who he is.
Exactly. Like, big vibes guy. Tre'Davious White continues to be big vibes guy.
Yeah. Unsurprising, more at 11. 803-0550, the number to call. Hour number two of the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Coming up next, this is WGR.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Derek and Zach. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Backup quarterback news.
That's backup quarterback competitions music right there. By God!
I need backup quarterback competition like I need air.
Well, good, because you're going to go ahead and gosh darn get it. Because it's here in Buffalo.
Mike White taking reps over.
Mitch Trubisky.
There we go. There we go. You know why I need it, though, Derek, honestly? We talked about it maybe on air, maybe off air. I can't remember. Mm. They only have one Sunday game.
Yeah.
They have two night preseason games. That's why I need it.
I need it just for, hey, welcome into Buffalo Bills pregame on the Buffalo Bills Radio Network. I'm not going to see much of Josh Allen today, but I am going to see quarterback 2 and 3.
That's all I need. That's all I need. I will tell you, though, Mitch Trubisky wearing number 11 and Mike White wearing 14 doesn't feel right. What? I see Mitch Trubisky in 10, and it's taking me a minute to, like, he's 11. It's still taking me time.
Would you rather Khalil Shakir not have 10?
No, that's the worst part. I'm like, no, like Shakir's 10. It's taking me a minute for Trubisky to be 11.
I like that. Like, remember like the old video games, how like they wouldn't change the jersey number when you put someone with the same number on a team,
mm-hmm.
if you created a team?
Yeah.
Also at number 10.
Yep.
Mitch Trubisky.
And it's college teams, because the rosters are bigger, one guy in offense, one guy in defense can share the same number.
Correct.
That typically is how it works. The NFL, though, I mean, that's, we all know I'm a big numbers guy with jerseys, but like I always pictured certain guys in certain numbers. Like, to be fair, I can't see Josh Allen wearing anything but 17.
Correct.
I also, like, it wasn't my time, but like Joe Montana wearing 19 for Kansas City is a crime. Like, he's 16. Like, that's who he is. Like, he should be 16. And like, Trubisky is not that guy. Like, I should not have this thing where like I saw the highlight yesterday of yeah. Max Hairston, and I was like, oh, who's that?
Who's that throwing him the ball?
Oh, it's Trubisky, of course. He's wearing 11 now. It takes me a second, and I don't like that. It's going to take me a second. The moment I see the first preseason game, is who's number 11 coming? Oh, it's Mr. Trubisky. Okay. I got there. I do like Mike White, though, as potentially the backup quarterback for the Bills. I've had this song and dance, though, for the last few years. I want so badly. And they don't need to. It's all it is. It's a desire for me to have happen. It doesn't need to happen. I want the Bills to invest in a high potential, very low floor backup quarterback out of college. Like, my dream would be for them to draft Joe Milton so that all of preseason I can just watch this uber athlete that probably will never start an actual regular season game of football play. Patriots fans, you know, had a ball last year. Drake May would play 3 drives, that'd be it. And then they would just go to Joe Milton and be a blast. I want that. I don't want Mitch Trubisky. I don't want Mike White. No offense. I just want like the uber-talented guy out of college that didn't totally have great success. That I want to enjoy watching backup quarterback play. That does not mean I want a Quinn Ewers. That does not mean I want a Quinn Ewers. That's not what that meant. But I want somebody where it's like, yeah, you're a freak athlete. You were a 4 or 5-star guy out of high school. Didn't really hit in college. You're a 6th-round pick. Fantastic. And a bunch of us can sit here like psychos going like, I watched him the whole time. Jake Fromm was also not that.
Jake Fromm was also not
if,
that.
If anything, the exact opposite of what I wanted. Where it's like, cool, I watched him in college and I hated every second of it. Now I get to watch him here. Awesome.
So Quinn Ewers.
So Quinn Ewers. Oh, man. You were doing that on draft day. I don't even know if that was on air or it was off, but you were like, we're getting close that they might take him. And I'm like, I'm going to get upset if they take him. I'm going to get real upset. I hope he has a great NFL career. It was just I was exhausted by the end of the Ewers era. And I'm like, and now that's who's going to dominate my August football schedule for the Bills.
That would have been incredible.
I'd have been exhausted.
That would have just been time is a flat circle.
It's exactly what that would have been. It's exactly what that would have been. It's the moment I thought I escaped him. I'm into the Arch Manning era, and you're like, no, he's going to become a beloved backup quarterback on your favorite pro team.
Right.
And I'd have been like, awesome. That's stupendous. I'm the one guy that has strong feelings
against
him.
I'm the one guy who can't escape.
803-0550, the number to call. Speaking of college, there have been a lot of college media days going on, conference media days. SEC was last week, Big Ten and ACC this week. Also this week in Detroit is the MAC Media Day. And
let's go.
The preseason coaches poll is out. I have mentioned UB a lot. I think they are going to be one of the favorites to win the MAC title. And if you think top four is one of the favorites, then you'd be right. They finish fourth in the coaches poll, though should be noted they do not receive any first place votes. Toledo comes in at one, Miami, Ohio, and then Ohio at three. And then followed by UB and then Northern Illinois rounds out your top five. So very, very exciting there. Can't wait for that season to get going. But yeah, the coaches poll has been finishing at fourth.
And
I think that's right.
Yeah.
It's fine. I have no issues. I know I brought up a lot BetMGM when I was looking at their odds, had them as the second best odds.
Yes.
But there's questions at quarterback.
Could
totally see the coaches poll going, yeah, until that's answered.
But seeing a roster you already think is on paper looking like the fourth best, even with questions at quarterback, hey, take that.
Pretty good spot to be in. So Justin Fields, by the way.
Yes.
We did mention that crisis seems to be averted. There were more reports following that, though. The crisis being averted is they didn't fracture his toe. He is actually still getting an MRI. And you brought up to me off air of, like, is this the dreaded turf toe?
Which is still the worst name for an injury in all of, like, the English language. Because it does not sound serious at all, and it actually is. But then I think I saw something from Ian Rappaport on this, where it's a non-big toe injury.
Yeah, dislocated non-big toe.
Okay, care to tell us which one then?
No, I'm okay with that. The less I know about someone's feet, the better. So
good point.
A non-big toe dislocated.
We got to know too much about Nate Geary's feet.
100%. So the less I know, absolutely the better.
Yeah, that's fair. But it's a non-big toe. So if you're worried about a specific digit on his foot, it's not the big one. If that matters.
I like Justin Fields a lot. I think we've kind of seen what he can be as a quarterback. He should have played longer for Pittsburgh. I do think that. I think they pulled the plug kind of ridiculously to go to Russell Wilson, and that ended up hurting them in the long run. But I think we've kind of tapped out. We kind of know what Fields is. For about an hour and a half, though, I was pretty into the idea of, like, Tyrod taking snaps. I'm not as big of a Tyrod fan as Joe DiBiase, but that's the guy that broke the drought, and he was wonderful here for 3 years.
There should always be a soft place in your heart as a Bills fan for Tyrod Taylor.
And Jeremy brought up the idea of, like, oh, man, could he break the two longest-running droughts at the time in the NFL? Or I think he said the longest ever, but he wasn't sure on that. But the two longest droughts at the time, the Bills and then the Jets, I was sitting here and I'm like, man, as long as it's not for the division, like if the Bills have the division locked up and the Jets are just fighting for the seventh seed, that last game at Highmark could have been a lot of fun if it was Tyrod doing that. That last game at Highmark could have been a lot of fun. Mainly because I don't really know how a lot of the crowd would have reacted. Like, let's put it in a box. Bills have the one seed. They've locked up the division. It's exactly everyone's fears for Week 18 with the red helmets. Josh Allen's going to go out there, take a snap, and leave so that he keeps his Iron Man streak going. And then it's Mike White or Mr. Trubisky, whoever the backup quarterback, and they run the rest of the offense. Will there be a semblance of Bills fans going, I really want Tyrod back in the playoffs? Or will it be, I want to ruin the Jets again? Because let's remember, when the Bills weren't even good, Ryan Fitzpatrick almost gets the Jets in the playoffs.
Correct.
And the last game of the year, he has a horrendous game against the Bills. They don't get in.
Yeah.
So I do wonder, it's like, no, does he get the Ryan Fitzpatrick treatment? Or is it more, hey, man, we're good now. We're not even going to play each other. Go have fun. I think it's closer to the Fitzpatrick thing, but I'd love to know what it actually became.
So I went looking for the all-time longest postseason droughts in the NFL's history.
I feel like it's Detroit, probably.
No.
Really?
Detroit's in the top 10.
Okay. Not top 5?
No. Technically, the Bills aren't in the top 5.
I'm going to hear a team that was barely an organization for 30 years, and it's going to frustrate me.
Oh, no. These are all actual, like, NFL organizations.
Okay.
The Cardinals, 25 seasons.
That was
But this is also...
That's bad on me.
That was back in 1949 when it started.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of teams that couldn't make it in the 1940s, Washington.
Oof.
For also 25 seasons. They started in 1946.
Oof. And then they get Sonny Jurgensen at some point. Then they finally do, I think.
And just to continue on teams that couldn't make the playoffs in the 1940s, the Pittsburgh Steelers, with 24 seasons, they couldn't make the playoffs starting in 1948, and they didn't do it until 1972. So the formation of the AFL, the Steelers were just bleh. Then,
oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
Then
yeah.
The Browns and Bills are tied at 17 seasons.
Okay.
Then the New York Giants in 1964, all the way to 81, 17 years. The Eagles, also 17 years, 61 to 78.
Yep.
Detroit comes in here as well. Speaking of teams that couldn't win in the 1940s, this drought goes through the 1940s, 16 years, from 36 to 52. Then the Cardinals, in a more recent time, 83 to 98. The Packers in the 1940s to 1960. How tough was the playoff field? 1945 to 1960. Okay. And then actively the Jets. Tied with the Bengals, 14 seasons. Buccaneers, 14 seasons. Chiefs, 14 seasons. Cardinals again, also dealing with the 1940s.
Yeah, I can see that.
Can I just like not count these at this point?
No, they can stay.
Because the Cardinals, Eagles, and Steelers all have the same time frame, 1933 to 1947.
Well, I mean, if you remember the Eagles
early years. What are the playoffs? Two teams?
But the Eagles' early years, before they get Dick Vermeil, was horrendous.
I know, but what I'm saying is, the 1930s and 1940s, was it two teams that made the playoffs?
No, thinking about it though, honestly,
there was no free
agency. They probably weren't trading so much. So if you nailed the drafts or whatever it was, you were probably fine. And if you didn't, you were hurting bad.
So if we wanted to talk about like modern era streaks,
mm-hmm.
the first four do tap into the modern era,
yeah.
even though they date back to the 1940s.
Right.
They tap into it where the AFL and the NFL do end up merging.
Mm-hmm.
But there's the Browns, the Bills, the Giants, the Eagles, the modern-day Cardinals, and then the Jets. If we're talking about modern-day, pre-merger, I'm kind of taking out of it. If Tyrod Taylor were to break two different double-digit streaks of postseason droughts... I say this somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but also very much not. Put them in the hall.
Put
the jerseys in the hall. The people should know about the legend of Tyrod Taylor.
Just be like, he broke the two longest-standing droughts. Would have been almost 10 years apart now. We're getting close to that.
31 combined years of playoff droughtness broken by one man.
It's willpower. He's also the last time Virginia Tech was good at football, too. Just saying.
Yes. I mean,
Tyrod's got that aura about him. 803-0550, the number to call. Let's go back to the phones. Nathan is with us. Nathan, good morning. How are we doing?
Great. How are you guys?
Doing well.
Personally, as a Buffalo fan, I love Tyrod Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason I don't want him to break the drought for the Jets would mean that the Sabres are the lone four major sports that have the longest streak.
Oh, you're so right. You are so right.
If he does break the drought, then I don't know. Maybe the Sabres should hire him and put him on like the equipment staff or something.
Just something. Yeah, right.
Get him on the coaching staff. Right. Do something. Yeah.
Exactly. But that is the only reason. Other than that, love Tyrod. Would love to see that.
Nathan, thanks for the call, man. That is something, too. That might also lead. And again, this scenario.
That's a taking the bad with the good kind of scenario.
Yeah. But in this scenario, this would also have meant Justin Fields' season was done. It does not look that it's going to be the case at all. Tyrod is going to be the backup quarterback. But if it were, the Sabres could actually play into how the crowd is going because of what Nathan brought up. If the Sabres were firing all cylinders and it's December and it's like, guys, they might be in the playoffs, bunch of Bills fans might not be feeling that feeling of, I don't want to be the lone locale here. I don't need that in my life. Like, I don't need this.
Well, the Sabres have also done this before where they dupe us with a promising start to the season.
It's been a few years, though. For the most part, the last two,
This incarnation of the Sabres gets off to dreadful starts often, actually.
So if they actually started good, there might be a ton of people going, wait, it's legit now. And I actually would probably put myself in that.
And then I would say, careful.
Yeah.
Careful.
Those playoff droughts, those numbers are absurd. I can't even think. I mean, I grew up in the Bills drought. Like, I didn't really see a Bills playoff game because I was alive, but, you know, not really cognizant yet at the time until I was a sophomore in college. I think sophomore in college. You're talking like the St. Louis Cardinals at the time, right? Because that would have been the St. Louis Cardinals, not the Arizona Cardinals.
Correct.
25 years.
25 years.
A quarter of a century. Gone. No play. You would say playoffs of somebody
multiple
in St.
teams.
Louis? Oh, man. That's just...
All time.
So bad.
Two teams with 25 and another with 24.
That's so bad.
Like, again, what were the playoffs in the 1940s?
You might be right. Like, two teams... going back and forth. A lot like baseball, where it was like, you need to win your division. There's going to be six teams. That's it.
The 30s and 40s, because you ready? The Cardinals, Eagles, and Steelers, the three teams that I listed there, 25, 25, and 24, they also have 14 on the same list, which tells me they all made it in different aspects here. Like... Well, actually, no. Washington's on that one. So it's the Cardinals, Washington, and the Steelers. But the Cardinals and Steelers have 14-year playoff droughts from 33 to 47, make it in 48, and then don't make it again until the 70s.
Oof.
Oof. You two teams had 1 year.
That's you know, looking back on it, too.
That's wild.
But like honestly, like now like talking about playoff droughts, too, because we've talked about it with the Sabres, like if they would have like backed into one of these years, like how, you know, would we really be sitting here like having like the same conversations and upset? The 2020 year, they play one more game, they play Montreal, they get in, something like that. It's absolutely, I think, more painful if you do have that drought 1 year randomly and then miss like the next 5-6 years. I think that's more painful than rather like the consistent, like we're just garbage. You kind of almost expect it and someone embrace it, where... that one random year where nothing happens and you're like just kind of happy, there's that excitement initially and then you're angry.
Like you're back to angry.
Like seriously though, like you look at the Bills drought, they break it off that random, you know, negative point differential. It's a lot of turnovers. They switch quarterback. Makes no sense why they make it, right? Just on, you know, looking at the stats. Let's say Allen misses or they just don't take him. They take Rosen.
Right.
And there is no second year jump up from, you know, we're 6-10, we're taking our lumps, we're going to be back next year. There is no 2019 jump.
No.
It's just bad. All of a sudden, that year where they make it.
Remember 2017?
But I think a lot of people more just get angry of like, because we've talked about it too.
Right.
The team getting rid of Tyrod.
Yes.
Now all of a sudden, there's going to be some vitriol towards that. We've mentioned it. Like Bean's legacy, I think for a lot of people, probably becomes very negative very quickly.
Very fast.
Because he is not there for the 2017 draft. And ultimately, that still would have been a very good draft. Instead, really, some of his first moves are to strip the roster down, get rid of the quarterback that broke the drought, and then go take a risky prospect. Like, when you put it in that context,
yeah.
Bean really put himself out on the line there. Really put himself on the line.
Right away.
Respect it, but right away.
Right away. But, hey... what better way to define your tenure?
Right. Because
a lot of general managers have to do that now. You are hired as a new general manager. You're taking a new quarterback typically.
Yep. And instead of resting on his laurels going, well, this guy got us here. He's playing fine football. He got us here.
Yeah.
He went, no.
And there is a team that did do that with a former Bills assistant general manager. Joe Shane has to extend Daniel Jones.
It's not great.
But now it makes sense, though, that general manager and that head coach are allowed to take a quarterback of their own.
Mm-hmm.
They should have been able to do it from the beginning. It's not like Daniel Jones was tearing up the league.
He threw 15 touchdown passes in the year they make the playoffs and beat the Vikings.
Yeah.
15 touchdown passes
yep.
in the year, what would that have been, 23?
Mm-hmm.
That, I'm telling you, I do think it was ownership going, no, you have your quarterback. Like, we're done.
Yeah.
And that is one of the most painful things.
One of the biggest crimes of NFL history is allowing Dave Gettleman to retire in dignity.
He kind of was right, though, on the Saquon Barkley pick. Like, he's
he
like
was that, right about that pick.
That guy's going to be wearing a gold jacket. He just probably won't go in as a Giant.
Which is hysterical now.
Probably going in as
but
an Eagle.
The part of the problem with that was, hey, we're going to take Daniel Jones at like fourth overall. Are you sure about that?
Yeah, he's Eli Manning.
Are you sure about that?
Oh, man. You remember that draft? They were fully convinced that was Eli Manning. Because David Cutcliffe at the time, who was Eli's coach in college, I think was still the Duke coach.
He was.
And so they're like, that's Eli Manning. And then they hit Jackson Dart. Yeah. I am a fan of Jackson Dart, though. I'm into whatever's going to be going on there.
His early. First pass of 11-on-11s in training camp was a pick six.
Don't say that to me.
I will say that.
And Russell Wilson is the starter for now. We'll see how that goes.
Hey, 803. It's fun to do overreactions to videos.
It's my favorite part of the offseason. 803-0550, the number to call. One other thing real quick on the playoff droughts I do want to bring up, because I know Jeremy and Joe were mentioning this too when talking about the Sabres drought. Jets have the same years. The droughts, or the last time they were in the playoffs, started when the first season of Game of Thrones and the last A Song of Ice and Fire book came out. I will note that George R. Martin is from New York and is a fan of both the Jets and the Giants. So there has been rumblings within that community for years that until the Jets get in the playoffs,
so
he will not release the book.
So that's why there's so much pain in those books and destruction and
yes.
Chaos.
Yes.
It's because he's a Jets
fan. He's a Jets fan.
He's a Jets fan. Now it all makes
sense.
And
a Mets fan. And a Mets fan. I should also point that.
There's a lot of pain in that writing, and now I understand where it comes from.
All comes from that. 803-0550, the number to call. James, we'll get to you after a quick timeout. You're listening to WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here with you on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. We've been spending a lot of today also talking about Bills training camp over at St. John Fisher. And that coverage is brought to you by Figo Carr and Joyce, your border attorneys, by Outlet Liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? By Connors and Ferris, your workers' comp attorneys, and driven by your Upstate Honda dealers for great deals on the entire Honda lineup. Visit your Upstate Honda dealer today. We now go back to the phones. Next up today, James is on the line. James, how are we doing this morning?
Not too bad. How about yourself?
Doing well.
So I just had a quick thought. We've been talking a lot about the offense and the defense and new guys, but I haven't heard anything about Teron Johnson yet. I know he's our all-pro nickel corner, but we haven't – and he kind of took a step back from last year stats-wise and you know, things like that. But I haven't heard anything of how he's doing in practice. And I know he's kind of a key part to our defense that kind of goes under the radar. But I just want to know how he's doing in training camp.
Yeah, James, thanks for the call. I think for him especially, and really for a lot of veterans as well, we say it a lot for offensive linemen, you know, the less you hear about them, the better.
Correct.
Johnson might be the same thing. And he took a step back last year. He dealt with a lot of injuries. He was beat up for a good bit of last year. His size has always been a bit of an issue for him. Like, that's maybe the one area where he kind of gets beat up a little bit, is he's not the biggest guy in the world. But for him specifically, it may actually just be the less you hear, the better. Because he's not going to be the guy that they're really going to be testing a lot, the whole thing. He's going to probably have some splash plays. We're only in day two, and pads are not on yet. But if we were hearing, yeah, Teron looks bad, like he's getting beaten regularly, mm-hmm. that'd be something. You're probably not going to be hearing a ton of just like, yeah, a guy that he was covering didn't get open because the ball didn't go there.
Right.
You know, it's also probably the bonus of having a good quarterback that's playing for you, or even a great one, is that you're not going to have those moments either where he maybe tests the boundaries where he shouldn't.
But also you do have a quarterback that is willing to actually test those boundaries. Mm-hmm. So if you do hear something, then good. Let's see what we've got. Josh Allen, go ahead. Test Teron Johnson. Have fun.
Yeah, to be fair as well, and I shouldn't totally say like he won't test the boundaries. In training camp is kind of when you should.
Yes.
But I think the less you hear about Teron probably actually is the better. He is an established player. He's a second-team All-Pro in 23. Don't worry about him. You know, he dealt with a lot of injuries last year. Should be fine. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's why we're talking a lot about the young guys, is there is a lot of unknowns in where they're going. I mean, like, Max Harrison's a first-round pick, but you know, the last time they took a first round corner didn't go particularly well.
Correct.
Now, the time before that did work out fairly well.
And that guy's back.
And that guy is back. So there's a bit of a 50-50 there. That I think that's why a lot of us are focusing so much on the young guys, is that that's the unknown. Teron's not really unknown. You know, Terrell Bernard probably is going to be just fine. And then now on that though, we did hear a lot about Christian Benford yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And just locking down guys, that whole thing. You know, maybe that is also something of just like he's kind of taking that next step. And yeah,
it does look like the offense has had its groove today, though.
They've had a much better groove. Keon Coleman especially has been somebody that's getting a lot of his flowers. I wanted to bring that up at some point today. The Hard Knocks cover for the season came out.
You and I looked at it yesterday before I left the building, and you were very happy to see certain aspects of this.
I was, and part of it is as I've mentioned, I like that they're doing Hard Knocks because it puts the Bills brand out there. My biggest issue, I guess, with the run of the last few years of the Bills is that I think there have been some players that maybe don't deserve all pro votes, but I'd like to see them maybe get Pro Bowls, Pro Bowl votes, what have you. I think there's been enough players that warrant that. I still think they have somewhat of a talent difference to teams like Philadelphia and even at times Kansas City, but not by much. But I was really excited to see a guy like Christian Benford be front and center on the cover. And they didn't just show his face or just his number. The cover is, you know, his back, 47, Benford. And, you know,
it's the only name you see.
It's the only name you see. I do know, or at least I think Joe said it, but we kind of saw Hard Knocks was really following around doing a feature on Khalil Shakir. You know, Deion Dawkins and Josh Allen do their own marketing. You know, Deion, and I say this lovingly, the guy never shuts up. He's everywhere. And
yeah,
it's awesome because I think he's going to have a great media career when this is done. And then Allen, of course, is the MVP last year. He's on Bob Does Sports, so he's doing like the YouTube golf thing. Like, he's everywhere. He's at these celebrity golf tournaments.
He's an NFL MVP. People will know who you are. Like, to his credit or maybe even his detriment, like, people remember, though. Like, Matt Ryan won that one MVP. Remember that?
You remember that.
But it might be because, like, he might just have been the random name of similar names constantly doing it, or Allen wins one again.
Mm-hmm. And this is just part of a run of a Hall of Fame career.
And it's just a run of who he actually is.
Mm-hmm.
But the three people that don't have a helmet on are Allen, Dawkins, and Shakir. And the other players that are shown on there, Greg Rousseau and Terrell Bernard, which for your programs this year, just for your adjustment, remember, Terrell Bernard is wearing the number 8.
I am going to have to remember that.
That's going to take a moment.
That's another one, too, where I'm going to see number 8 on defense. Go, who is that? Oh, it's Terrell Bernard. Okay.
That's right. It's Terrell Bernard. It's going to take probably a couple weeks.
Yeah. But he is also somebody that I look at, too, and I'm like, okay, like, that's exciting, too. He is somebody I think absolutely deserves Pro Bowls, maybe even pushing all pros. And that's where I'm excited, maybe at the, you know, fully healthy linebacker room. We haven't actually gotten any update on Dorian Williams, at least that I've seen. But, you know, this is kind of what I hope that they do, that they're able to do with Hard Knocks. Yeah, I want to see the feature on Trey White. And, of course, they're going to do probably some stuff on Joe Andreessen, or they'll pick one of these young undrafted guys out of a lineup and kind of run with their story. But also, I think there's some really good players on the Bills that haven't really gotten a lot of media attention that I kind of hope start to. Benford, especially for me, because when that ESPN top 10 lists were coming out, you know, we did a show on, like, who do you think will be on this list next year? And I pushed back a little bit on Christian Benford because I was like, I want to see when the cornerback list comes out. Well, it turns out he didn't even receive a vote.
He didn't even receive a vote. Taron Johnson did.
Mm-hmm. And but, so I wonder, though, with that list coming out, we do know the Bills have some editorial power here with Hard Knocks. I wonder if they pushed for some of their guys to specifically be on the cover, and maybe a guy like Benford, who they think is going to have another great year, to be somewhat front and center. I do wonder about that. Because I think that would be a really, really good decision to get his name out there. To, you know, people comfortably say it all the time about the Heisman, that it's a campaign. And they mean that both in terms of, like, the campaign on the field, but the campaign off the field. Travis Hunter did deserve the Heisman last year.
Mm-hmm.
But people were also talking about him at Big 12 Media Day. And before that, as potential Heisman candidate. Ashton Jeanty
did it on the field.
He comes up late. And, you know, there really wasn't a campaign for him. And because he wasn't a quarterback, the campaign wasn't natural. It, you know, but if he was more well-known before.
It was a reactive look at the numbers campaign.
And so maybe if there was.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Something before maybe he does end up getting the Heisman. Probably not. I think Hunter really did put up one of the best seasons in college football history. It's unreal that he was able to do what he was able to do at two different positions, and he's going to continue that into the NFL. But this can kind of be the same thing for the Bills. It's not the Bills embedded, which is, by the way, mostly watched by Bills fans.
Right.
This is now going to be a national
thing.
This
is HBO Hard Knocks,
mm-hmm.
which it's HBO Max, HBO.
HBO.
Max.
Max, yep.
Max HBO,
mm-hmm.
Back to HBO Max.
It's tough, man. It's tough. I just get me in the room.
Did they randomly have a time where they were like just called H Max or something? Like
I have questions, but I'm excited for a guy like Benford and also Deion Dawkins as well because of the offseason he had. We talked about this when it was a first announced. There's gonna be a segment on him getting the NFL offensive lineman award
mm-hmm.
created in literally 4 months.
Right. He did. Heavy lifting on creating a Protector of the Year award.
Yep. I've mentioned as well with Greg Rousseau, because of the revamped defensive line, is he going to be somebody that puts up a bigger statistical year? Well, if people know who he is on a national scale before the season even begins, you know, week four when ESPN or NFL Network are doing a spot on, like, Greg Rousseau, 4 sacks in 4 games, the name already registers with you.
Because you watched it on HBO.
You already know who that is.
You watched it on Hard Knocks.
Quarterback is easy. That does it itself. When you have a left tackle with the personality of Deion Dawkins, that's easy. He does it himself.
But the rest of the team does not have that.
In part, their position doesn't really help them either. Like, pass rushers, you'll know when they get a ton of sacks or they're an early draft pick.
Yes.
That's kind of the two things. After that, it's a lot of unknown guys. Cornerback, especially, we've talked about it, is such a volatile position year after year. Because you'll go from 1 year, I got 6 picks. Great. Next year, guess who's not thrown to you?
Anybody.
Anybody. So you'll go down to 1, and it's like, oh, they're washed. No. No one targeting them.
Right.
You know, there's very few guys that year after year after year had zero issues being great corners. Darrell Revis is kind of the best of you know, the modern generation. We'll see what Sertan's able to do, you know, following being literally named the defensive player of the year, not even just an all-pro corner, but like in an award that is dominated by how many sacks did you get? A cornerback won that award.
Yeah, it has to be something where the Bills have an opportunity right now to gain a little bit more notoriety across the league with plenty of players on a great collective roster. Mm-hmm. There are good players. We've said it, the lack of star power about the Bills.
Yep.
The lack of them. And it is this interesting dynamic. Like, the Bills are perfectly fine being this great team that has a bunch of good players and not a lot of superstars to them. And yet, now you have a chance to actually give some shine to the players that are a little unheralded.
Mm-hmm.
The players that actually should get a little bit of the shine. Bernard, Benford. Those are players that deserve it because they have put up top-tier, high-end production and do not get the recognition for it. The recognition they got has been through contract extensions. Everyone on that list, by the way, do note that the 4 major extensions that had to get done during the offseason are on the Hard Knocks poster.
They're all there.
They're on the Hard Knocks poster.
Which also tells you, I mean, of course, like that's how the Bills feel about them.
They
gave
are
them
the
extensions
future.
Early.
Well, they were all up for those extensions this offseason. They got all 4 of them done, and James Cook was the one that didn't get done. So they are the future. Mm-hmm. It's also, no, we can get loud about these guys now because we paid them, and most of them were below the market value, supposedly. So we got a bargain on a couple of these guys. Now we're really going to sing about them because we got them locked up. Now they're not going to cost us more because there's not as much of a microscope under them.
Mm-hmm.
So this is smart business. It's no longer keeping Christian Benford a secret so that he doesn't cost as much. This is, yo, we got Christian Benford, dude.
Yeah, he's locked down. Now
locked in.
Now let's do a little bit of a political campaign for him.
Let's let the people know. We got these guys locked up all under extensions this off season.
Yeah.
Who's the first player they're featuring? The first extension they get done.
I will say, and you mentioned his name there, and he did not get an extension, but he is one of their more well-known players, and he's not on the cover. And then listening to Brandon Bean talk yesterday about how, yeah, it's kind, you know, they want to pay everybody, but, you know, oh, you look 2-3 years down the line, like, we don't want to pay somebody and then have to cut somebody later. Can you take anything from James Cook not being on this cover?
I can take it the same way that I've taken everything about the James Cook approach, which is, I hate to say it, but make sure you enjoy James Cook while he's still a Bill.
Yep. And that's kind of how I took it,
And James
too.
Cook is taking the same approach, which is, I'm going to do what I can. I will work hard, be a team-first guy, and show any team, be it the Bills or anyone else, that I'm here for you.
Yeah, he may have done himself more favors come free agency around the league of he did in an offseason that has been filled with noise for a lot of players. James Cook was sort of the afterthought because at every turn, we talked about it, at every turn, he picked the route that would help the team and maybe hurt his checkbook. Not his checkbook, hurt his bank account.
Right.
Because, well, he showed up to mandatory minicamp, didn't get fined. Nothing, he's fine. Training camp, is he going to be holding? Nope, he's practicing in full. And when he talked to the media, and even when he talked to podcasts, I don't want to be a problem. I want to reach the highest of highs. I don't want to be a problem.
The video of him tearing up pictures of the Dolphins and the Chiefs in there. Like, the guy has shown, no, I'm here for my team. I understand. It looks like he's saying, I understand the situation I'm in. I don't have the strongest bargaining chips. But I am going to do what is right for this team because, be it the Bills or somebody else, I will be rewarded for this in addition to a good season.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that James Cook has the best season that a running back can have in the NFL. Because the Bills fans, and James Cook will all benefit from it one way or another.
803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Do want to make one note here before we do hit our next timeout. Per Elena Getzenberg, defensive end A.J. Epinesa joins linebacker Dorian Williams as leaving Bills practice early today. Hope to get more word on them. But to a certain extent, the injuries are starting to pile up.
That one better not be a hand injury, I swear to goodness.
I was just about to say that. I'm like, we do know there
we
was
we do know
that,
he bonked Jackson Hawes.
That little scuffle.
Yes.
So, could be something to monitor. Of course, Knox, Chenault, Brown, and Van Pran Granger also out for Bills. So the injuries are starting to pile up here.
Of course, talking about training camp, all throughout, coverage of Bills training camp from St. John Fisher University is brought to you by Fiegel Carr & Joyce, your border attorneys. Buy Outlet Liquor when you need to stock up. It's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? By Connors & Ferris, your workers' comp attorneys. And driven by your Upstate Honda dealers for great deals on the entire Honda lineup. Visit your Upstate Honda dealer today. Derek Kramer, Zach Jones, we wrap up the Extra Point Show coming up next here on WGR.
Welcome back, everyone. Quick final segment here as we get you ready for Sabres Live today. Do want to remind you as well that Sal Capaccio takes you behind the scenes during Bills training camp with Sal's All Access Facebook Live on WGR's Facebook page, driven by your Upstate Honda dealers for great deals on the entire Honda lineup. Visit your Upstate Honda dealer today.
Yeah, I do think, though, there's a lot to see and hear from training camp today. James Cook talking now, it looks like. And it does seem like it's a lot of the same sentiment. He knows that he would get fined. He doesn't want that to happen. He's going to go and get what he's going to get, knowing that he needs to be out there for his team. From after practice, Cook, quote, "It's my job, so I have to participate so I don't get fined. Just go out there and show them I'm ready to go earn what I want to get. I deserve what I want."
Mm-hmm.
End quote. I will say that is good. And that is something where Cook will be rewarded one way or another by the Bills or another team for his tactics. He knows that he doesn't have a lot of chips on the table here. And he knows he's on a team that probably has realistically told him, we can't fit you into the budget. We'd want to give you what the money is, but we just, like, we can't do it.
Bean talked about it yesterday.
And that's a regrettable thing. But then the player goes, okay, so we all know, and that's all right. The writing's on the wall. I'm not going to ask you to trade me. I'm going to be a free agent next year. So we'll play the year, and we'll go and get it.
He has now become somebody like, I am. Please do not get hurt. Like,
I want
them to use him a lot, get the most out of him while you got him, the whole thing. But because I think he's making, in a way, kind of a bad decision. But also, like, I really respect it.
I wouldn't say it's a bad decision, though.
Monetarily,
it's not. But I would even say the approach is not that bad either.
It's not.
He's staying true to his principles, which anyone that's read anything on James Cook's mannerisms, like if you watch him, take it for what it is, man. He is the kind of person, he'll say it and he means it.
Yep.
He's absolutely not going to say one thing and then do something else.
I do find it funny, though. Like, he is not mincing his words either when he's speaking with the media. Like, I'm seeing correct. Some of these quotes. Like, it's my job. I got to participate out here so I don't get fined. Like,
he is saying.
Like, that's awesome.
Yes.
Now you're going to play around.
But then being asked about why he wants to be in Buffalo long-term. Quarterback, the fans, great organization.
Yeah. He's happy. It's working here. Why
and
would
he
I want
does want to spend his entire career in Buffalo. It just sounds like to me, both sides know. I don't know if we have money for you.
Mm-hmm.
We can look at next year's books, but like that's next year. You do your job here, and either we or another team will reward you.
Yeah.
That's what it looks like.
Absolutely. We also have some breaking news I do want to share before we wrap up today. Wrestling legend Hulk Hogan has reportedly passed away at the age of 71. This being first reported by TMZ, though if you do know TMZ, sometimes not in the greatest way, but they're usually pretty correct, especially when it comes to celebrity deaths. Mm-hmm. Ozzy Osbourne earlier this week. Now, Hulk Hogan appears to have passed away today at the age of 71. The wrestling legend, well before, Derek, either of our times, but it's kind of impossible to not know Hulk Hogan, really at any kind of point in your life. He really did become a fixture in American culture, really, I think throughout his entire life, starting in wrestling and then going on to being an actor and continuing to wrestle, because most of those wrestlers don't fully retire. They kind of keep going until the end. And so, yeah, 71, he appears to have passed away. Ozzy Osbourne also earlier this week as well. So kind of tough week there. That's going to do it for me and Derek. We'll be back on tomorrow for a Friday edition of the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Day number 3 of camp. But coming up after a quick timeout, some little Sabres talk with Sabres Live. This is WGR.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.